all approve of eating visitors, you know. In fact, he said, holding up a finger, in fact, just the other day I initiated a petition to spare the young ones, you know, whose magic is most pure and thus most coveted.
All the same, Alice said steadily, why is he still alive?
Tim cleared his throat. Well, you see, it's the law that requires it. The law says that prisoners must be made as useful as possible before they're sold off to the highest bidder.
Right, Alice nodded. So, just to be clear, you enslave us, work us nearly to death, sell us, and only then do you eat us.
Why, Miss Queen's Meadow, when you put it like that, it sounds almost inhumane.
Alice stood up carefully, collected her pamphlets, her dignity, and her broken heart, shoved them in her pockets, and turned to Oliver.
Our deal is done, Oliver Newbanks. You may return home now. I will find Father on my own.
And with that, she turned on her heel, stormed out the door and down the stairs and through the hall and back outside, and left in her wake a stunned Oliver and a disheartened Tim, and did not cry but 6 tears before she sniffed the rest away. And then she ran. She ran as far as she could get from Tim's red door, ran directly into and through the forest Oliver had told her to stay away from. Alice didn't care a whit what Oliver thought anymore until she reached the edge of the woods and could go no farther. It was there, in the middle of nowhere, not to be confused with nowhere, that Alice fell to her knees and hugged herself through a crush of heartache.
Father was in enslaved imprisonment.
This was a truth Alice's young heart could not handle. 3 long years Alice had been lost and tortured, hoping and wishing that Father would come home. She'd always prayed he was okay, that she would one day know what had happened to him, but now that that day had arrived, she was sorry for it. Her heart seized, her lungs squeezed, and Alice fought through the pain for a gasp of air. She felt infinitely powerless in the face of Father's enslavement, but being angry gave her something to do, so she took hold of it with both hands and refused to let it go. Oh, there was so much to be angry about. Speaking of which, Oliver was a liar. This, another truth that broke Alice's heart. She'd trusted him, befriended him, and Oliver had lied. He'd manipulated her. He'd withheld information from Alice over and over, and he'd kept secret the most critical details of her father's imprisonment. He should have told Alice exactly what he needed from her. He should have secured her voluntary participation in all parts of his plan. He'd made a series of increasingly stupid, short-sighted decisions. He was entirely at fault. But between you and me, dear listener, I would dare to share my humble opinion that Oliver's stupidity alone was flimsy reasoning for Alice abandoning her otherwise well-traveled, well-informed partner at such a critical juncture in the story. If Alice had any sense of self-preservation, she would have waited for a safer moment, or a safer place, to have walked away. But Alice and Oliver had more in common than they realized. The two possessed passionate, rumpled spirits, and they were both guilty of crimes committed of childish ignorance. Alice had neither the maturity nor the self-awareness to wonder at Oliver's ability to be such a consistently talented liar. She did not think his skills could be a symptom of some greater problem, so she couldn't have known then that Oliver's lies were motivated not by cruelty, but by fear. Fear of rejection, of abandonment, of interminable loneliness. There was very little she knew about his interior life, simply because she'd never asked. Oliver, too, had made no effort to understand Alice. His young life had always been safe and boring and predictably comfortable. He'd never known the weight of grief or poverty. He did not understand that a broken heart long untended would eventually cease to beat. And Alice, whose heart had been badly broken for some years now, desperately needed a body upon which to unburden her pain. Tonight she chose Oliver. In this moment, anger was a magic all its own. It gave Alice energy, adrenaline, and a distorted sense of self-righteousness that would, for a short time only, power her through a pair of unwise decisions. Abandoning Oliver would be the first.
Keep up. There's no time to waste. Oliver Newbanks was equal parts terror and anguish. He dashed out of Tim's home and was running around in a blind panic, checking under every lake and hill for a glimpse of his friend, but she was not to be found. If only Oliver had known where to go looking for Alice, he would have had no trouble finding her, as she was making no effort to disappear. In fact, she'd made quite a spectacle of herself when she thought no one was looking. Alice was sitting on her bottom in the middle of the woods, her head dropped into one hand, her skirts bunched up to her knees, and was currently in the process of turning the entire forest an electrifying shade of blue. She'd changed the color of these woods several times now, but couldn't decide which hue would do. And then, as she squinted up at the trees and allowed herself another brief, self-indulgent little cry, she thought, "Oh, those leaves would look better in pink, wouldn't they?" And then turned the trunks pink, too. Playing with magic had always made her feel better. Clever listener, I'm sure by now you've guessed it, haven't you? I know I've not kept it much of a secret, and maybe I should have done, but I'm glad you've guessed it, because I'd like to finally be able to say this honest thing. Despite her protests to the contrary, Alice's gift was never to be a dancer. Her true magical ability was to be a living paintbrush. Alice could change the colors of anything without lifting an eyelid. She could turn a person blue, and a thing green, and a place yellow, and even though she should have been proud of her skill, she resented it. Hated it. Denied it so vehemently that she'd actually convinced herself it wasn't a real talent. Because Alice, no color Alice, could change the color of anything and everything but her own colorless self. She was sure it was a magic that existed to mock her. Still, the motions of making color always helped calm her heart. And when she finally had her fill, she dusted off her hands and dug through her pockets for the pamphlets she'd neglected to read earlier. She'd had enough of relying on Oliver to make all the decisions and to tell her where to go. She could figure it out on her own, she'd decided, especially now that she knew the basics of Furthermore. And besides, she had information right here, right in her hands. All she had to do was study it. But Alice couldn't focus. Her hands were shaking and her thoughts were clouded, and the truth was, she was scared. Alice had hoped to be brave. She'd hoped she was stronger than her fears. But Alice was injured on the inside, and though her anger kept her upright, it couldn't keep her steady. And from moment to moment, Alice would slip. She was tired, and she was worried, and she was consumed by thoughts of Father, of what his life had been like these past years, and how she'd ever reach him. He was in danger, she knew that now, but she also knew Furthermore would do its best to keep him from her. This would be no ordinary task, she was realizing, and suddenly the seriousness of it all was weighing down on her. She wasn't sure she was strong enough to save anyone anymore, not even herself. Alice ran absent hands across her face and rubbed at her eyes. She picked up her pamphlets, put them down, and picked them up again. She wanted to rest, but there was no time for that. She wanted to bathe, but there was no time for that either. She felt tattered and dirty, and she desperately needed a washing, but there was Father to think of. Father whom she loved. Father who left when she needed him most. Father who got lost and couldn't find his way back to her. There was never a day she didn't think of him, never a day she didn't need him. She missed him with a fierceness that crippled her sometimes. She missed everything about him, about them, about how they used to be. She missed the way they used to fight, she and he, every day. He would tell her she was beautiful, and she'd call him a liar, and they would argue until she gave in. He never let her win, never let her convince him she was right. He fought harder for her than she ever fought for herself. Alice closed her eyes. Enough!
Father said, shaking his head. He was pacing around the room. He was angry, his cheeks flushed, his eyes pinched, his brows furrowed.
I hate hearing you talk about yourself like this. You're a blank canvas, Alice. No person is better primed for color than you are.
Alice looked up at him, frustrated and exhausted.
Then when, she asked, when will I have color of my own? When will I look like you and Mother?
Darling Alice, he said, reaching for her, why must you look like the rest of us? Why do you have to be the one to change? Change the way we see. Don't change the way you are.
But how?
She asked, her little fists clenched around his fingers. She tugged him closer.
How can I do that, Father?
You're an artist, he smiled. You can paint the world with the color inside of you. The memories tugged on her joints, her fists unclenched. Her heart ached. It was a moment of weakness, and she allowed it. She felt she'd earned it. She'd decided long ago that life was a long journey. She would be strong, and she would be weak, and both would be okay. So she bit the inside of her cheek, let her chin fall against her chest, raked all 10 fingers through her knotted, tangled hair, and she let herself feel weak.
But then?
Well, it was strange. She just realized that she hadn't thought much of her white hair at all lately. Certainly not as much as she used to. Before coming to Furthermore, Alice could seldom move from moment to moment without being reminded of her nothing hair and her nothing skin, but not here. In fact, it struck her as silly now to be bothered by her missing colors. What did it matter what she looked like when she had purpose? She sat up a little straighter. So what if Oliver was a liar? So what if she'd failed her surrender? So what if she was lost in a strange land with no idea how to get home? Father needed her, and need didn't care what nothing looked like. Alice had a proper mission now, and she would not back down. She would fight harder for Father than he could fight for himself. Nothing would stand in her way. Alice had only managed to take one step forward before the fox found her again. He seemed to have appeared out of nowhere, suddenly sitting in front of her, proper paper tail wagging in the fading light. He looked calm and sweet and bowed his head every time Alice looked at him. She wanted to pick him up and take him home. Alice could hear the ghost of Oliver's voice in her head, advising her to be careful. She could almost picture the fear in his face, the warning in his eyes. But Alice didn't care about Oliver's advice anymore, and she was determined to prove she could make wiser decisions without him. She bent down in front of the paper fox and scratched him. Or her? Under the chin. The rough, copper-colored paper felt strange and warm against her fingers. He seemed to like that, so she pet him between the ears, and he nuzzled right into her hand.
"Hello, fox," she said.
Fox jumped back, bit her skirts, and crinkled his paper nose at her feet. Alice laughed and felt the cracks in her heart mend, bit by bit. She took it as a sign. Maybe the fox was the thing Oliver had missed. Maybe the fox was sent especially for her. What if the fox was trying to lead her to Father? Alice already knew what Oliver would say about her theory, and even his imaginary condescension made her angry. So she made a sudden decision.
Fox,
she said. The fox yipped, and its paper tongue lolled.
Fox, will you take me to my father?
The fox nodded eagerly. Alice clapped her hands together in joy.
Oh, you do know what I'm saying, don't you?
She asked. Again the fox nodded.
So you'll help me?
She said.
Will you help me save Father?
Once more the fox nodded. Alice cried out and wrapped her arms around the fox.
Thank you, she said. Oh, thank you.
The fox jumped around and yipped again and was already bounding ahead of her through the forest, turning back every few feet to make sure she was following. Alice didn't know what was waiting for her, but she was excited to be taking charge and making decisions for once. She felt certain that this was right, that she would make her way through Furthermore in a way Oliver couldn't. Oliver had never even made it to Father, so what did he know about saving him? She was sure that this fox was the key. This optimism carried her through the next half hour. Wherever the fox lived, it was far from where he found her, and the farther they went, the stranger the landscape became. Alice assumed they were still in still, but she couldn't be sure. For just a fleeting moment, Alice caught herself wishing Oliver was around to tell her where they were headed. But she quickly checked the impulse and focused instead on her certainty that the fox would help her find Father. But the truth was, she was beginning to worry. The ground beneath her was losing its grass, becoming sparer and drier as they went. Night had tilted into day, and the sun swung back into the sky. Heat filled the gaps in everything, and though Alice felt her instincts prick, denial kept her from registering the warning. Alice was in a daze by minute 34, one foot following the other and neither knowing their way. She blinked once, twice, so many times before the horizon stood upright and everything slipped sideways. It was strange, she thought, so very, very strange, how her feet kept moving even when she didn't want them to. Not only did she not want them to keep moving, she wanted them to do the very opposite of keep moving, but there was no one to tell her feet anything at all, as her mind was always missing when she needed it most. Her throat was awfully dry. She licked her lips, and the sky flew in and filled her up, so hot it stuck to her teeth. The earth beneath her was crisping at the edges, every inch fried sunny side up. Oh, it was hot! Horribly, suffocatingly hot. Alice ached for miles from heel to toe, wincing in the blinding light of what seemed an endless summer, and wondered, in a moment of clarity, if Oliver was worried about her. She had no idea where she was. She tried to look around, but the moment she turned her head, she was flat on the ground. She was pancake-thin, plastered to the earth. She was physically impossible. She was suffocated by her eyes, her lips, the length of her face, the impossible weight of her bones, and the skin that zipped her in too tightly. She was too human, too many dimensions for this world, and she only realized her eyes were closed when she decided it would be wise to wrench them open. Sheer force of will pried her eyelids apart. She gasped and wheezed, her eyesight flattening at the edges, and when she blinked again, once more, and three and four times after that, she found herself staring upside down at a bright paper sun stapled to a spinning, glittery thread. She couldn't have known it at the time, but Alice had just come upon the village of Print, a two-dimensional town that could not sustain her. Alice sat up slowly, reaching one arm forward to steady herself, and heard the crunch and rustle of something very wrong. Her eyes shuttered, broke open, and focused on a world made entirely of paper everything. Paper clouds chugged alongside a paper sun, their bottoms taped to the tops of red and white striped straws. A crumpled, folded, and refolded half-moon was pinned to the blue construction paper backdrop. Paper trees stood tall and not, and fat and not, and animals hop-walked around parallelograms of pasture. Homes were rectangles and triangles stapled together, chimneys puffing swirls of smoky tissue straight into the sky. Hills were pasted, one on top of the other, in different shades of green, and stick-figured people stomped around flat and sideways, an entire dimension of being snipped right off. It was confounding. Astounding. She was out of breath with excitement. Amazement. Alice had no idea she was in danger. How could she? Eagerly, she leaned into her arm to push herself up and onto her feet, but fell forward, her arm now limp where a limb should be. And when she looked down at herself, she felt the strangest sensation. She heard the strangest sound. Alice was very likely screaming, though if you ask her about this today, she denies it, and I don't know why. Pride, I suppose. I'd not guilt her for screaming had she done so. Her histrionics would have been for good reason. The fox, you will remember, was still with her, except that he now had Alice's arm in his mouth and was very desperately trying to tug her sideways into his paper world. Alice was on the cusp of entering the village of print, and she was still suffering the effects of being just close enough to a village that could collapse her. She was now moments from being dragged inside and made two-dimensional forever, and she was fighting for her life. It was Fox against Alice. Alice tugged and tugged, but it was difficult to know how hard to fight because in so many ways she felt nothing. Part of her felt half-real, paper-thin. She could only sort of feel the pain of being pulled in different directions, because some part of her had suddenly become something else, and she didn't know what that was. She hadn't realized that the fox had managed to pull one of her arms all the way through to the two-dimensional town, and it wasn't until she heard a great roaring rip that she understood how tremendously wrong all this had become. But technically, she won the fight. The fox was scampering away, so Alice must have won the fight. Why, then, was Alice screaming so much louder now? Again, she denies this. What was there to shout about? And while we're asking questions, I'd like to wonder why, in that very same moment, was Alice feeling so much regret? Well, I will tell you what I think. I think Alice was wishing she'd never run away from Tim and Oliver. I think she was wishing she'd never left Farrenwood at all. I think she was wishing Furthermore had never existed, and that she'd never had a 12th birthday, and that she'd never surrendered the wrong talent. Oh, I think Alice was filled with all kinds of regret. She ran blindly, wildly, charging back down an impossible path of impossible gravity, one foot pounding harder than the other in the blazing heat of an impossible sun. Alice was sorry. She was sorry for everything. She was sorry Mother didn't love her, and sorry Father had left her, and sorry for ever thinking she could save him. Alice ran until she tripped, until she fell to her knees and her face hit the ground, until she felt tears falling fast down her face. Only then did Alice understand true loss. Only then did she discover she was missing an entire arm. She wasn't bleeding, and this was the first thing Alice noticed. The second thing she noticed was that her right arm had been ripped off at the shoulder, and as she was only now beginning to regain the full use of her mind, the third thing she noticed was that she had been partly turned to paper. Where blood should have been, there were instead wisps of tissue, and where bone should have been, there was instead a strange breeze. And though she felt the inclination to bend her arm, to make a fist, to shake herself out of hysteria and tell herself to stop crying. "It's all right. I'm alive. I'll survive," she would say. She could do nothing but stare at the space where something important once was. And then, dear friends, the fourth thing she noticed, her bangles were gone. The loss of an arm and an entire arm's worth of bangles, the latter, of course, being the greater loss, was too much to digest, especially like this. Like this, her head aching from the hit, her legs cramping from the run, still climbing to her feet and stumbling to stay upright, still moving, now panting, two short legs trying not to trip, her 2 feet pounding the earth, hard hits like heartbeats against the cracked dirt beneath them. She was off balance, unsteady with only one arm, but she wouldn't stop. She wouldn't think. She refused to acknowledge any of this, not even for a moment. Not until the dirt turned back into grass and the sun fell over sideways and night climbed over day, and she was back where she started, forever moving forward just to move backward in time. Finally, Alice fell to the ground. She rolled over in the grass, adrenaline keeping her from collapsing into panic, and took a moment to marvel at the twilight she'd returned to. Just above her head was Tim's big red door, and just in front of her was wide open nowhere with a pond nearby. The cricket sang to scratch an itch, and the frogs croaked along because it was a catchy tune. The tall grass danced with a sultry breeze, and the moon sat atop an unwashed cloud, shining over everything. Somehow, even in this moment of perfect terribleness, the still night was still lovely. fragrant and awfully enchanting, and Oliver Newbanks stood before her, looking like he'd been spun from glass. Oliver Newbanks, who appeared to be catching his breath. Oliver Newbanks, who was looking at Alice, eyes wide, chest heaving, sweat beating at his brow, and he said once, softly,
"Alice?"
So she whispered once, softly,
"Oliver?" "Alice,"
he said, urgently now, eyes tight and shining,
"are you all right?"
His voice was pitched low, like he was afraid it might crack, and Alice shook her head.
No. No, she wasn't okay.
The moon was quickly rising, and with it a veil of darkness that partially obscured Alice from view, so Oliver drew closer, and only then did he see what had happened to her. He jerked back, clapped a hand to his mouth, and cried,
"Oh, goodness, Alice!"
She didn't know what to say. Oliver reached out to touch the place where her arm might have been, and she saw his hand shake.
"Are you in pain?"
he whispered, his voice trembling. Alice shook her head again.
No.
In fact, she felt nothing at all. She hadn't yet processed the shock of losing her arm, so she wasn't sure how to react. Should she be scared? Should she be strong?
"Will it grow back?"
she asked. Oliver's eyes went so wide Alice could see the white rims around his irises.
"No,"
he said softly.
"The effects of furthermore, when they can't be fixed, are always final."
That's when Alice began to feel. His words stabbed at a corner of her brain. It was a twisty, piercing pain that exploded behind her eyes and took her breath away. For no reason at all, she was suddenly desperate and aching. Aching where her arm used to be. And suddenly there was nothing in the world she wanted more than to have two arms. Suddenly all she could think about was having two arms. Suddenly there were a million, hundred, trillion, thousand things she wanted to do with her arms, and suddenly she couldn't. Suddenly she couldn't. And it was all too much. The stabbing pain caught fire and dropped a flame down her throat, and this shocked her heart into a terrible, tripping beat. And in less than a moment she was so thoroughly and absolutely shattered, she couldn't calm down long enough to make herself scream. She looked at Oliver.
"Have to find a painter," he was saying. "What?"
The word was more of a rasp than a word. Alice had already lost a father, the length of her right arm, and an entire set of bangles. So it made sense that her voice would follow suit.
"Yes,"
Oliver was saying.
"It's the only way."
He was on his feet now, arms crossed, pacing the length of the same 5-foot stretch.
"The problem is, I don't quite know how to find one. I'd only ever heard rumors, you know."
He looked up at her. "And the trip will take us off course, of course, and cost us a great deal of time." He looked away again, mumbling,
"Though, obviously, the expense would be worth it."
He seemed to be speaking entirely to himself.
"Wait,"
she rasped again.
"What do you mean?"
Oliver stopped pacing, looked up in surprise.
"We have to get your arm fixed," he said. "But I thought you said..."
He shook his head hard.
"No, no, it won't grow back, but we could get someone to paint you a new one."
Alice was about to ask more questions, but a sudden hope had taken up too much room inside of her, and she couldn't think around it. She made the strangest noises, startled, squeaky sounds that made it too obvious she was trying not to cry.
"Alice," Oliver said quietly, "will you tell me what happened?"
He offered her a handkerchief, and she took it.
"Where did you go? Who did this to you? How did you get back?"
So Alice told him the story. She told him about trusting the fox she shouldn't have trusted, about the paper world she saw, about the fox ripping off her arm as she tried to escape.
Oliver was devastated. Alice was ashamed.
They were each convinced of their guilt, and they were right to be. They, too, had torn holes in each other, and the wounds, unhealed, had only led to more pain. The simple truth was that they were both to blame for what had happened. Oliver for his reluctance to trust Alice and for his failure to make her feel like a true partner, and Alice for making decisions motivated by anger and hurt and recklessness. But young hearts are more resilient than most. They would both recover.
"Shall we?"
said Oliver tentatively. "Time is such a tricky thing. We can never take too much." His eyes were nervous, asking all the questions he couldn't bring himself to say aloud. He was worried, Alice knew, that she would abandon him again. So when Alice nodded, Oliver smiled, relief sagging his shoulders.
"Where will we go?"
Alice asked.
"To fix my arm. How will we get there?"
Oliver looked stricken as he stared at her, and Alice thought it was because he felt sorry for her, but that wasn't it at all. Oliver felt much more than sorry for Alice. His heart had grown 10 sizes since he'd met her, and the hours he'd lost her had nearly broken him. She was injured, and he knew it to be his fault, to be a result of his selfishness and stupidity, and he wasn't sure he could forgive himself.
"I don't honestly know,"
Oliver said softly. He looked out into the distance.
"But not knowing is only temporary when we've got the minds to figure it out. We'll find a way."
Alice nodded. She had no fewer than 1,000 questions and concerns, but she managed to swallow them down. Right now she would make do with this reconciliation, and the rest, she hoped, would come. Oliver knelt in front of her and smiled. A single tear had escaped down the side of his face, and the breeze touched his tunic, folding it gently between its fingers. Oliver closed his eyes.
"I'm so sorry, Alice," he whispered. "Please forgive me."
And because she was a girl made of more heart than hurt, she forgave him on the condition that he too forgive her.
"Easily done."
Oliver took her only hand and held it right up against his chest, and then they sank, he and she, together, the two of them, right into the ground. When Alice opened her eyes again, she felt the blazing heat of a familiar sun beating down her back. Alice's whole body stiffened, and Oliver, who was now paying close attention, misunderstood her fear.
"Sorry about that," he said. "These emergency exits can be a bit uncomfortable."
"Emergency exits?" said Alice, distracted. Oliver nodded. "If you want to get to the next closest village as quickly as possible, you always exit downward, but the transitions can be a bit rough." He laughed. "One time I down-exited directly into a mass of dead sheep, and I couldn't get the wool out of my mouth for days after. I was coughing up hairballs for hours."
"Oliver, we should leave. Now."
The ground beneath them was blisteringly hot, and Alice was beginning to see spots.
"This is where the fox took me. This is near the entrance of that paper village. I'm sure of it."
Oliver froze, words still caught in his mouth. Luckily, his shock lasted only a moment. He took Alice's hand and began to run, but just as they picked up speed, Oliver was knocked sideways, hitting the ground hard as he fell. Alice cried out, panicked, and tried to help him up, but she was abruptly yanked backward, tossed face first into the dirt, and dragged off by the hem of her skirts. She kicked and screamed and managed to break free twice before being pinned down again, but fear had finally paralyzed her. The paper fox had returned, and this time he'd brought his friends. 4 paper foxes had cornered them. 3 of the 4 were built of a rather normal, read dull, shade of brown paper, and these 3 had Oliver cowed on the ground. The only fox built of a vibrant copper color was the one standing directly over Alice's body. This was her fox, the very same one from before.
"Alice!"
Oliver shouted. She could hear him struggling.
"Alice, are you—"
But his voice was quickly muffled. Alice chanced to glance his way, only to find that one of the foxes had wrapped its tail around Oliver's mouth. Alice felt her pulse racing. The heat was sweltering. Sweat was beating at her brow. The fox had locked eyes with her, and she was doing all she could to stay calm. Alice knew she should say something, but she wasn't sure where or how to begin. This was a paper fox, after all. and as far as Alice was concerned, there was no such thing as magic that could make animals talk. Still, she had to try.
"What do you want from me?"
she said. The fox stared at her for just a beat longer before pawing aggressively at her skirt pockets.
"What is it?"
Alice pulled herself up to a seated position, and the fox retreated a few steps. She patted her pockets with her single hand and unearthed their contents, 4 visitor pamphlets, her black card, and her blonde ruler. Alice held them out to the fox.
"What do you want?"
she asked.
"Which one?"
The fox nodded through her wares, took one of the pamphlets into his mouth, and made a strange whine, indicating with his head that she should retrieve the pamphlet from him. Alice wasn't sure what was happening exactly, but she was relieved to know that at least her life was no longer in immediate danger. She tugged the pamphlet out from between the fox's paper jaws and glanced at the title.
"Furthermore, phrasebook, how to understand the languages you don't speak."
Alice inhaled sharply. She looked from the fox to the pamphlet and felt her heart pound quickly in her chest. But this time Alice wasn't afraid. She was excited. She flipped open the pamphlet with an eagerness that dispelled any lingering fear she might have had, but Alice's eagerness quickly turned to dismay. Every inch of the inside pages was blank. Heartbroken, she hung her head. Perhaps the fox, or maybe Ted, had made a mistake. Or, you know, there had been a printing error. Whatever the reason for her misfortune, Alice was disappointed. She had already begun refolding the pamphlet when a gentle, handsome voice said,
"Leave it open."
Alice froze.
"Miss Greensmeadow, please look at me."
In that moment, Alice was certain she'd misplaced the whole of her mind. But let me reassure you, dear listener, that she was in full possession of her faculties. The fox was most definitely speaking to her, and, can I just say, I don't know that I understand the extent of her shock. The fox, like most animals, paper or no, is fully capable of speech. That we make few concerted efforts to understand the fox language is a fault entirely our own. Now, where were we?
"Miss Greensmeadow, please," said the fox, "look at me."
Alice looked up, astounded.
"You are in danger, Miss Greensmeadow. You must leave here at once."
"Of course I'm in danger," said Alice. "You've tried to kill me twice already." The fox shook his head.
"I was not trying to kill you. I was trying to hide you. I do sincerely apologize for what happened to your arm."
Alice harumphed.
"But I thought you'd be safer in my world. You should go, Miss Greensmeadow. Go back to where you came from."
"And why should I? Why do you care what happens to me?"
"I know why you're here. We all do. And we know you've lost no fruit tree in the town of Slender."
Alice gasped.
"Your journey to find your father is a noble one," said the fox, "but he had no right to meddle in our affairs, and neither do you."
"What do you mean?" said Alice.
"What did father do to meddle in your affairs?"
The fox tilted his head at her.
"Our lands agreed long ago not to go poking in each other's magical matters, and your father, who is publicly known for consorting closely with Ferenwood town elders, was found here and furthermore asking too many questions about our magic and how we use it."
"But he was arrested for wasting time."
"Yes," said the fox. "He was indeed arrested for time thievery, but he was also charged with suspected espionage."
"What?"
Alice felt the blood drain from her face.
"Tread carefully,"
said the fox.
"Furthermore knows you're here to find him, and this land will not give up a spy so easily."
"But he's not. He can't be."
"Go home, Miss Greensmeadow, unless you too would like to be held accountable for his actions."
"But if you think my father's a spy..."
Alice faltered.
"Why are you trying to help me?"
"You are an innocent."
The fox tossed back his head.
"And I don't agree that you should be harmed for seeking out a lost loved one. Besides,"
he added,
"I don't approve of eating children. It's uncivilized."
Alice didn't know what to say.
"You don't have much time, Miss Greensmeadow.
The fox was growing anxious. He'd been circling around her.
Everyone here is waiting for you. Go home. Now, before you're found. Who?
Said Alice.
Who's waiting for me?
There was a sudden rustle in the distance, and the fox's eyes darted around. He looked back at Alice with a wild nervousness.
Snap in three in case of emergency.
What?
Trust a friend who looks like one.
What are you...
We know, said the fox. We all know.
Alice felt a prick of terror pinch the back of her neck. She couldn't explain how, exactly, but she felt certain that something was about to go terribly wrong.
Please,
she whispered.
I just want to find my father. Can't you help me?
I'm afraid I can't. You would do better to return home.
He turned to leave.
Wait.
Alice grabbed the fox's leg. He stopped and stared at Alice's hand.
Will you let my friend go?
She asked. The fox narrowed his eyes.
You may go freely on your way, Ms. Queensmeadow, but I'm afraid the boy will have to come with us.
What?
Said Alice, stunned.
But I thought you didn't approve of eating children.
I don't approve of eating good children. But your friend is an untrustworthy, duplicitous lout whose long list of infractions could fill the many trunks of our trees.
The fox held his head high.
Little liars will not be rewarded in furthermore.
But he didn't mean any harm.
Liars have the longest tongues, Miss Queensmeadow, a delicacy we all enjoy. And we've all been hungry for so long, you see, that it's hard to deny ourselves a fresh meal when it's so well deserved. I'm sure you understand.
With that, the fox took a deep bow, broke free of Alice's hand, and scampered off in Oliver's direction. Alice sprang to her feet, shoving her belongings in her pockets as best she could with one hand. The four foxes were already busy carting Oliver off into the distance, and now that his mouth was unmuffled, Alice could hear him screaming into the sunlight. She ran forward, horrified but determined, and snatched the ruler from her pocket, charging at the paper creatures as though it were a dagger. She swung and swatted at the foxes, kicking and yelling as they yelped and fell away. Alice hadn't managed to do much real damage to the animals, who, for paper creatures, made formidable opponents, but her own friendly fox looked so heartbroken by her betrayal that Alice was tempted to feel sorry for him. Fortunately, her guilt was quickly wicked away. She didn't care that her life had been spared. No fox would eat her friend, no matter the lies he'd told. But the foxes would not be beat. They threw themselves forward more quickly than Alice could shove them back. She managed to land a few hard thwacks with her ruler, but her single arm was quickly tiring, and though Alice was now huddled protectively over Oliver's body, the foxes were showing no signs of letting up. Alice had underestimated the power of animal hunger. These creatures had been promised a meal, and they would not leave without it. Oliver tried several times to aid in his own defense, but the foxes were thrashing about so forcefully, growling and snapping, that Alice was worried they'd bite his head clean off.
"Down exit,"
she cried, crouched low over Oliver's back.
"Down exit, please."
But nothing was working. Oliver, to his credit, had tried desperately to persuade the foxes to let him go, but his talent had been withered by fear. His occasional flickers of success weren't strong enough to fight all four foxes. Alice, meanwhile, was becoming increasingly panicked. She was fumbling, losing her grip on the ruler as her arm weakened under strain, and all it took was a moment's hesitation. Alice was flung backward. She landed heavily on her only arm, her head slamming hard against the ground. It took her a few seconds to blink away the dizziness, but she clenched her jaw against the dull, throbbing pain and drew herself up, determined not to sway. Alice could still hear Oliver shouting and fighting, landing kicks and punches wherever he could, and she was just about to charge forward again, ruler clenched tightly in her hand, when she felt the ground shift beneath her. One of the foxes had slammed its head into Oliver's jaw with a resounding crack, and Oliver had gone still. The foxes snapped around his limp figure, fighting to see who'd get to take the first bite. and Alice felt her brain disconnect from her body.
No!
she cried. She stumbled as she threw herself forward, falling hard onto her knees, her agonized screams ringing out across the barren landscape. She bent into the raging heat and blinding light of this strange town, and felt the fresh pain of fear and loss pry open an iron door in her chest. And all at once, everything changed. The land, the sky, the foxes, and even Oliver disappeared. Alice had reduced the color of all things around her, the large, the infinitesimal, and everything in between, to a single shade of black. And she was so wholly unaware of the magnitude of what she'd done that it wasn't until she heard the confused, frenzied foxes knocking into one another that she realized she'd snuffed out the sun. Alice alone stood in stark contrast to the painted night. She examined her single arm, the white of her skin glowing neon in the dark, and for the very first time in her life, Alice Alexis Queensmeadow felt powerful. Alice heard the foxes scamper off into the distance, the four of them no longer brave enough to fight blindly. When she was finally sure they were gone for good, Alice closed her eyes, drew in a deep breath, and, with the simple twitch of her mind, reset the colors she'd so fully distorted. She spotted Oliver instantly. He was on his back, his arms and legs splayed, his lip bloody, but thank heavens he was still breathing. Alice ran to her friend, tossed her ruler to the ground, and pulled him up against her. She shook him, but he wouldn't wake. She slapped him, but he wouldn't speak. "Oliver, please," she cried, but he wouldn't stir. Tears were streaking fast down her face, and though she fought valiantly to hold on to hope, she wasn't sure how to fight this. Panic had overtaken her. Alice was just in the middle of giving Oliver another good shake when her eyes hit upon the ruler she'd dropped so carelessly onto the ground. The inscription in the blonde wood was staring up at her. "Snap in three in case of emergency." If this wasn't an emergency, Alice was a dill pickle. She didn't hesitate. Desperation had left her no options. She grabbed the ruler, held it in place with her foot, snapped it twice, leaving her with three broken pieces, and cried, "Help! Help! This is an emergency!" And everything slowed. The scene before her went soft and blurry, and a moment later all things froze. The bees went still in midair. Sitting birds went silent mid-chirp. Only Alice was free to move, and when she did, she stood up. A crack, a zip, and an exclamation point later, three extremely thin, ludicrously tall, bright orange doors were set before her. Hung on each door was a different sign. "Step through to fix your arm. Enter here to save your friend. Open me to find your father." And then, in small print under each sign, "Choose only one door, or die a painful death." It's a great testament to the tender heart of our dear Alice that she did not agonize over this decision. Alice Alexis Queensmeadow knew right away what she would do. She decided to save Oliver, of course. Alice would no longer be bullied by the tricks and games of Furthermore. She didn't care what the doors said. She would have her friend and her father, and maybe her arm, too. She would find a way. So she marched right up to the door she'd chosen, turned the knob with great conviction, and tripped, in the most unflattering way, straight over the threshold. With a sudden twist in her stomach and the uncomfortable displacement of her heart to her throat, Alice fell forward, screaming, into a strange sky. She flipped upside down only to tumble right side up, only to plummet horribly to her death, and it was only the sound of someone else's blistering screams that so swiftly silenced her own. Oliver came barreling through the sky like a bullet, slamming into Alice so hard she nearly knocked her head against his nose. She righted him as best she could and then took hold of his hand, squeezing it tightly, relief and joy flooding through her. She had no idea how much she'd come to care for Oliver until she'd nearly lost him.
Don't worry,
was the first thing she said to him.
Everything will be all right.
And Oliver beamed at her. After ascertaining that he was indeed in one piece, and not two, Alice quickly explained everything that had happened with the fox and her ruler and the emergency doors, careful to leave out the part about things changing colors. Alice wasn't ready to talk about that yet. Oliver's head was spinning with the weight of all this frightening new information, but somehow, despite the horrors they'd seen, a huge smile had hinged itself to his cheeks. Alice had chosen him, you see. Alice had chosen to save him, and Oliver was euphoric. It was all rather sweet. But Alice was thinking of other things now. The thing was, they'd been falling through the sky for quite a long while now, and they still hadn't reached the bottom of anything, and it was beginning to make Alice anxious. To make matters worse, it was taking a great deal of effort to keep her skirts out of her face, and with only one arm, my goodness, and she was growing tired.
Oliver,
she said.
Yes,
he said.
When do you think we'll reach the bottom?
Of what?
Of...
Alice looked around at the emptiness surrounding them, the bluest skies, a couple of clouds, and no sun she could see from where she sank.
Of this,
she said, nodding at nothing in particular.
When do we get to the bottom of this?
I haven't any idea, he said simply, and right then they hit the ground. Alice and Oliver landed with two great thumps, one after the other, the impact rattling their teeth and bruising their knees.
Right,
said Alice, as she picked herself up off the ground, dizzy and light-headed. She squinted at the scene set before them.
I take it you've never been here before, have you?
Oliver shook his head. They were standing in a narrow lane, walled in by hedges three times taller than Oliver, and packed so densely with roses and lilies and peonies and lilacs, and gardenias and freesia and hyacinth, that the two of them could hardly breathe. The flowers were stunning, but the sweet scent was so intoxicating as to be sickening, and the farther they walked, the more difficult it was to tolerate.
Well,
said Alice,
I suppose we're about to die, aren't we?
You jest, said Oliver, raising an eyebrow, but it's entirely possible. Alice shot him a half-hearted grin.
Well, then, should we down-exit?
Oliver laughed.
You can't just down-exit your way through furthermore, Alice. You're only allowed to do it once every five villages.
See, how do you even know that?
Alice said, throwing her only hand up in defeat.
I haven't any idea how to go about unearthing information like that.
She sighed, then mumbled.
And anyway, I was wondering why it hadn't worked for me earlier.
Oliver offered her a sympathetic look. To be fair, he said, I've had your father's journals to guide me. I'd have been lost without them. Alice sighed, kicked at a patch of dirt, and trudged on. Quietly, she said,
I suppose I've now thrown us entirely off course, haven't I?
She looked up.
I've made a great mess of things.
Not at all, Oliver said brightly.
I know it might not seem like it, but you're doing exceptionally well in furthermore. Most people don't make it this far.
Oliver, she said, visibly embarrassed, I tried to make it on my own for 5 minutes and I had my arm ripped off, the result of which forced us to take an unknown path that ended with our being attacked by a skulk of foxes who nearly bit off your head and forced me to snap my ruler in three.
She put her hand on her hip.
I don't think that makes me any good at this.
Well,
he hesitated.
No, maybe you're not an expert, but...
Oh, don't bother, Oliver. I'm terrible on my own, and we both know it.
Oliver bit his lip. His mouth twitched. And Alice couldn't help it. She started laughing. So Oliver did, too. The two of them laughed and laughed until tears streamed down their faces. And for just a moment, neither child was bothered by the strange floral lane they walked through, or the dangers they'd survived, or the ones they'd soon encounter. This was a time of ease and release, and while it was possible they'd sniffed one too many sweet blooms and were unnaturally moved to silliness, it was far more likely that they'd just discovered one of life's greatest tricks. Laughter was a silk that would soften even the roughest moments.
You're right, Oliver was saying. We should probably stick together from now on.
Yes, please,
said Alice, still giggling.
I've no interest at all in doing this on my own anymore. and I hope you will at least try to stop me if I attempt to abandon you again.
I'm glad to hear it, said Oliver, eyes shining.
I'm so glad.
Alice smiled. Oliver smiled back.
Alice was missing an arm, and somehow it didn't matter. She was much happier now than when she had a spare.
Alice, said Oliver once the laughter had subsided. He was looking at her only hand.
Yes,
she said.
Did you really snap your ruler in three parts?
Alice nodded and, after tugging them out of her pocket, held up the broken pieces for him to see. Oliver looked suddenly anxious.
You know, he said, snapping your ruler like that. That is, I'm terribly grateful, but...
What is it? Alice narrowed her eyes.
What's wrong?
It's just... Your ruler is a container. If you snap it open, its contents scatter, and you lose all the time you've been allotted, and... If you lose all the time you've been allotted, you'll have to live on borrowed time, and if you're caught borrowing time, you'll be arrested for stealing.
Alice's mouth had fallen open.
Then why does it say to snap my ruler in case of emergency?
For its own selfish reasons, I suppose. You'd get your emergency sorted out just in time to be carted off for time thievery.
So I'm going to be arrested?
Oliver said nothing.
Oliver?
Probably.
He looked anguished.
Maybe? I don't know, Alice. I have no real experience in this matter, only theories.
Alice groaned.
I'm truly sorry, and I could be wrong, you know.
Alice sighed, defeated, and looked off into the distance. Time had turned against her, and she didn't know how much she had left.
Maybe,
she said, trying not to sound too hopeful.
Maybe if I get arrested, you could use your emergency option to help me.
Oliver shook his head.
I wish I could. But all Tibbons are different. Mine isn't the same as yours.
Tibbon?
Alice said. Is that what it's called?
Yes. Furthermore likes to pretend its rulings are fair and forgiving, so every visitor is offered one bit of help on their journey through the land. But the help is different for everyone, and it's always decided at border control. Once it's been issued, it's inscribed on the back of your ruler. It's called a Tibbon.
Alice frowned. How could they know what bit of help I'd need on my journey before I'd even begun?
Oliver raised an eyebrow. How do you think?
But Oliver,
she said, confounded,
using magic to tell the future, they couldn't possibly.
Couldn't they? Furthermore, does what it wishes.
But happenstance is the most unstable, imprecise kind of magic. Surely even furthermore would know better than to rely on magic that grants only flickers of the future.
You think too highly of this land if you think it wouldn't resort to lowly tactics, said Oliver.
Remember, furthermore has no interest in playing fair.
They could snatch us up at any moment, Alice. They could kill us right now if they wanted to. Don't you see? We're alive only because they want us to be.
That makes no sense.
It makes perfect sense. Furthermore doesn't want to kill and conquer its meals with no fuss or fanfare. It's far too easy that way, too boring.
Oliver shook his head.
No, this is a land that likes to play with its food.
But, Oliver,
said Alice slowly, carefully,
do you think it's possible they're torturing us a bit more than they do most people?
Oliver's eyebrows shot up his forehead in surprise.
What makes you say that? Something the fox said to me.
Alice looked away.
He said that Father was charged with suspected espionage. They think he's the Farrenwood spy come to meddle in their magic.
Wow. Oliver let out a low whistle. This is entirely new information to me, but goodness, it would explain a lot.
Alice looked up. You think so?
Oliver nodded. Your father's early journals never expressed such fear as I felt on my journeys. It would make sense that your father had done something to anger them, that we were on some kind of hateful watch list as a result, and that our path would be more intentionally treacherous.
He hesitated.
Which is why I'm now even more concerned that you've used your Tibbon. Alice bit her lip.
Is it really that awful to spend it? Have you never used one before?
Not ever. I had one the last time I was here, too, but I never trusted it. I don't like accepting offers of help from Furthermore. Alice bit